Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to unpack the really essential insights from, well, a whole stack of sources to get you well-informed, especially on topics that profoundly impact our well-being and, you know, liberation. Today, we're taking a deep dive into something called Décolle de Trompe. It's a framework developed by Reverend Futurist Erskine Matthews. And it suggests healing isn't just like a finish line you cross. It's more of an ongoing active practice, particularly centered on Black individuals and communities. We're going to explore its four interwoven stages: decolonize, deconstruct, detraumatize, and detox. We'll look at how each one sort of builds on the last, guiding us toward collective liberation. Our mission, like always, is to pull out the most important nuggets from this material for you.
Yeah, and it's genuinely crucial to grasp a framework like Décolle de Trompe right now. The struggle for equity, it's really expanded beyond just traditional activism, hasn't it? It reaches deep into personal healing, communal healing. This framework really acknowledges that the path to liberation often requires this profound internal transformation, too.
Okay, so let's unpack this then, starting with that first stage. Decolonize.
Hmm.
When the framework talks about unlearning oppression, what does that actually look like in practice?
Right, so at its core, decolonization involves actively unlearning these persistent narratives, you know, ideas of inferiority or submission that have been imposed through, well, centuries of colonization and systemic oppression. It's about consciously shedding those external beliefs about who you are or maybe who you aren't.
So it sounds like it's about actively kind of shedding what's been put on you to reconnect with something truer. But what's maybe one of the biggest challenges people face in this unlearning part that the framework points out? Something that might surprise people.
It's a really good question because, you know, it's often not as simple as just knowing these things are external. I think the biggest insight here is the profound emotional and psychological resistance to actually letting them go. Often, even really harmful narratives can offer this weird false sense of security, right? A familiar identity, even if it's uncomfortable. So decolonizing really means confronting those ingrained comfort zones and daring to embrace an identity that might feel unfamiliar at first, maybe even rebellious. It's a journey of reconnecting to ancestral memory, reclaiming cultural practices, rebuilding that collective self-respect. And what's fascinating is how trauma therapists, the culturally responsive ones, are now specifically, and this is a quote, centering our own rich familial, cultural, and ancestral wisdom in their work to help with this unlearning.
Wow, that really clarifies how deeply embedded these external ideas can become, actually shaping your internal beliefs. It's about that conscious work, then, to realign with a deeper truth.
Yeah.
For someone who's been grappling with these narratives for maybe decades, how does the framework suggest they even begin to tell the difference between those ingrained external voices and their own authentic truth?
Well, the framework really emphasizes listening, both internally and externally. It suggests active introspection, you know, questioning where thoughts like I'm not good enough or I don't belong here actually come from. And it also points to community dialogues. Those shared experiences can expose the common external narratives. The idea is by hearing others identify similar imposed beliefs, you start to see your own with a bit more clarity. You recognize them as like external things, not inherent truths. It's a process, discerning what truly resonates with your spirit versus what's been, well, programmed in.
Okay, so it's one thing to start identifying and shedding those external narratives. But as you peel back those layers, you often find even deeper sort of inherited patterns, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which leads us perfectly into the second stage, deconstruct.
Yeah.
How do we challenge those inherited beliefs once we've started the unlearning?
Right, the deconstruct stage. This is where you really dig into those inherited beliefs that got entrenched by colonial regimes, especially in areas like language, spirituality, social norms. Think about the internalized stigma someone might hold around their identity or mental health or even gender roles. The goal here is to dismantle those, you know, outdated constructs that just don't serve you anymore and then reconstruct your worldview based on self-authorship, on communal values, not these external impositions. It's about building a foundation that is authentically yours and collectively beneficial too.
Hmm. It certainly makes you think about just how deeply ingrained some of these constructs really are, doesn't it? It's not just about what you believe, but tracing back why you believe it and asking if that why actually serves your liberation. And, you know, as we dismantle these layers of belief, we inevitably bump up against the raw reality of trauma. Which brings us to stage three, detraumatize. The framework makes this really crucial point that trauma among Black individuals isn't only inherited, it's also acquired. Can you break down the three forms of trauma it addresses and sort of how they show up?
Absolutely. Yeah, this stage acknowledges just how multifaceted trauma is in this context. So first, there's personal trauma. These are the direct, deeply impactful events someone experiences in their own lifetime. Things like childhood abuse, sexual assault, maybe violent encounters with law enforcement, or even severe medical neglect. These experiences often manifest as PTSD, chronic anxiety, depression, emotional dysregulation, and even physical or somatic symptoms like high blood pressure or insomnia. There's research, for instance, showing Black women exposed to interpersonal trauma like domestic violence or sexual assault, they exhibit higher rates of PTSD, especially when racial discrimination adds to that stress load. It's like a double burden. Then second, we have intergenerational trauma. This is profound. It's the echo of historical events, slavery, Jim Crow, segregation, medical abuses like the Tuskegee study, ongoing systemic disenfranchisement. These traumas aren't just in the past. They continue to shape health disparities, mental health challenges within Black communities, even generations later. Studies even point to epigenetic changes, cumulative stress responses being transmitted across generations, showing up as anxiety, depression, or maybe a heightened stress sensitivity, even for people born long after the original events. It's literally carried in the body across time. And finally, there's secondhand trauma, or vicarious trauma. This refers to the traumatic impact of witnessing disturbing events, often through video, news media these days. When individuals who look like us are harmed, our brains can process it almost as if it happened to us directly. There's a powerful example cited about the police killing of George Floyd triggering PTSD-like symptoms in an adolescent called Sean in the research. It led to chronic anxiety, hypervigilance, insomnia, even perfectionism. So this chronic exposure to media showing racial violence really contributes to pervasive racial trauma and symptoms very similar to PTSD.
Wow. It's truly sobering, isn't it, to recognize the profound and layered impact of these traumas as you lay them out. Personal, intergenerational, vicarious. It really makes you realize how, well, inescapable this healing journey can be for many Black individuals and communities. It makes me wonder, how does the framework specifically empower people to navigate trauma that's so deeply rooted and often ongoing?
That's key. The framework emphasizes that just the recognition itself is empowering, you know, naming these unseen burdens. Beyond that, it shifts the focus away from a purely individualistic view of healing towards one that's deeply rooted in communal and ancestral practices. It pushes for culturally attuned therapy, yes, but also things like collective storytelling, ancestral veneration, creating communal spaces where shared experiences are validated, not dismissed. It's about moving beyond just individual coping mechanisms to collective healing practices, affirming that these traumas are systemic, and so the healing needs to be systemic too.
Okay, so after addressing these deep wounds, starting that healing process, we get to the final stage. Detox. Now, when many of us hear detox, we often think, you know, physical cleansing, maybe a juice fast or something.
Yeah.
Can you clarify how this stage goes beyond just the physical in the Dekolditrome framework?
Right. Yeah, in this framework, detoxification is much broader than just a diet. It extends to lifestyle changes that actively affirm your bodily agency and holistic health. It encourages rejecting habits that contribute to chronic disease and instead embracing practices that really promote vitality. So yes, that includes things like nourishing food, proper hydration, regular movement, getting adequate rest, fostering mental clarity. But the core idea here is that wellness itself becomes a form of resistance. Caring for your body is framed as reclaiming your autonomy, directly challenging the neglect that's often rooted in systemic oppression.
That's a really powerful reframe. Wellness as resistance. Because, you know, for many, detox can sound like an individual choice, sometimes even a privileged one. What's the key insight in this framework that turns personal wellness into something collective, maybe even political, especially when systemic barriers make even basic health challenging for so many?
Exactly. The framework highlights that for communities historically denied basic resources or subjected to harmful health narratives, the very act of prioritizing wellness is inherently defiant. It's revolutionary in a way. It's not just about individual choice. It becomes a collective commitment to health as a means of survival and, importantly, flourishing. It links your personal practices directly to community well-being, suggesting that a healthier individual contributes to a stronger, more resilient community, which then, in turn, has more power to collectively challenge those systemic barriers. It's about agency, really. It's like saying, despite the systems designed against us, we will thrive.
And underlying this whole four-stage process, there's this principle of healing justice. What's its significance within Dekolditrome? How does it kind of tie all these stages together?
Healing justice is foundational. It basically asserts that personal and communal healing are fundamentally inseparable. You can't really have one without the other in this context. It's deeply informed by frameworks like the historical trauma model, which emphasizes restoring community traditions and a renewed self-image to heal that intergenerational pain. So healing justice advocates for reconnecting individuals and communities with their ancestral traditions, their belief systems, collective practices. It's really a call for us to heal together, to actively dismantle systems of inequality, and to co-create liberation for everyone. It reminds us that our individual wellness fuels the collective fight for justice, and that collective fight supports our individual healing. They feed each other.
That really reflects such a powerful shift, doesn't it? Moving from thinking of healing as this solitary journey to seeing it as a collective endeavor, rooted in shared history and aimed at a collective future. This sounds incredibly empowering. So, for our listener, how can these big, powerful ideas from Decoded Trauma actually be integrated into daily life? How do we move from theory to, you know, real-world application?
Yeah, the framework does suggest practical ways to bring these stages to life. For example, you could engage in, say, a monthly decolonial dialogue group, a space to regularly question those internalized messages and reclaim cultural narratives within your community. Somatic group circles are another really powerful tool, places where emotional experiences shared through movement, through breath, through just being present together communally. It's a way to physically release what's been held in the body. There are also ideas like wellness challenges framing nutrition, movement, rest, not just as good habits, but as daily revolutionary acts of self-care and community care. And finally, things like creative healing justice initiatives, community murals, ancestral storytelling nights, mutual aid workshops, these all foster collective healing and expression. It's about active participation, really, in your own and your community's liberation.
And for those listeners who want to dive even deeper, the source material we looked at offers a great springboard of supportive resources. You'll find important books like Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome by Dr. Joy DeGruy, Decolonizing Therapy by Jennifer Mullen, and Decolonizing Trauma Healing by Dr. Laura S. Brown. There are also frameworks to explore, like somatic abolition and liberation psychology, and some incredibly valuable community and digital platforms, places like Therapy for Black Girls, the Liberate Meditation app, Black Therapist Rock. Even online discussions like on Reddit about decolonizing trauma show how symptom awareness, community support, and culturally attuned therapy are fostering real healing momentum. You know, this deep dive into Decoded Trauma really illustrates such a comprehensive and transformative practice, from decolonize to deconstruct, detraumatize, and finally detox. It feels like a process that genuinely reorients identity, nurtures collective resilience, and reclaims sovereignty. It's clearly not just a theoretical framework. It's presented as a very real, lived pathway toward liberation.
Exactly. And that's really the core message, isn't it? Engaging in Decoded Trauma, it's not positioned as a one-time task you check off. It is a lifelong communal journey toward freedom. There's a poetic call to renewal in the source material, this idea of casting off the yoke and breaking old fetters to let life renew. With each gentle tending, each loving embrace, we're invited to spiral toward wholeness, reclaiming our rightful place. So maybe the thought to leave with is, how might you embark on or perhaps deepen your own communal journey toward liberation and renewal?